The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What is up, crew? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and we are going to talk about the Lightning Network today. And in fact, I want to link to, because there's a couple of videos from the Bitcoin Halving live stream from Bitcoin Magazine in this. I've already watched them, and there's just so much happening with Lightning, particularly very recently. But there's an article on Bitcoin Magazine. It's just kind of a short introduction to a lot of this by Peter Schwega, and it was just dropped a couple of days ago. It's titled How the Lightning Network Will Grow Following Bitcoin's Third Halving. So let's go ahead and hit the article, and then I'll talk about a lot of the exciting things I've seen in Lightning recently. How the Lightning Network Will Grow Following Bitcoin's Third Halving by Peter Schwega. The Lightning Network, Bitcoin's second layer solution for faster and more efficient payments, was integral to the ecosystem's third epoch, with a number of Lightning-focused projects iterating and expanding upon the technology to establish it as the most promising protocol built upon Bitcoin. Further reading, What is the Lightning Network? Link provided, I will add it to the show notes. It became clear during Bitcoin Magazine's Bitcoin Halving livestream that this development is only poised to ramp up following Bitcoin's third ever subsidy halving. As leaders from the space's Lightning-focused projects took the stage, they elaborated on the progress we've already seen from this relatively new technology and projected the evolutions that are to come. Lightning in the Fourth Epoch with Elizabeth Stark. As Elizabeth Stark, CEO of Lightning Labs, explained during her Bitcoin Halving session, the story of the Lightning Network and that of Bitcoin's third epoch are largely one and the same. In reflecting on the past halving, the 210,000 blocks, that was really when the first Lightning development started, she told moderator Colin Harper. So much has changed since then. It's been wild to see things evolve since the last halving. But even though the Lightning Network has seen powerful development and significant adoption during its life between the second and third halvings, there are some obstacles still to be overcome. For Stark, this is first and foremost a question of Bitcoin liquidity. With Lightning, you've got amazing speed, amazing scalability, very low fees, but you do have this liquidity aspect to Lightning, she said. You need inbound capacity in order to receive funds, and of course, you need funds outbound in a channel in order to send. So to me, I see one of the challenges as ensuring that we have the proper liquidity. Stark and Harper went on to discuss the role of Lightning service providers, use cases beyond payments, and more. How the Lightning Network changes the game. To further explore how the Lightning Network has fundamentally changed Bitcoin and its potential for this next epoch, the BitcoinHalving.com livestream hosted a panel featuring Jack Mallers of Zap, Alex Leishman of River Financial, Chris Dannon of Iterative Capital, and Will Reeves of Fold. Each participant is doing more than their fair share to boost Lightning development and put the second layer protocol to work through innovative products and services. During the panel, they discussed the characteristics that make Lightning development effective and attractive, what it will take for more people to onboard, and the next 4 years for Lightning. Touching on just how nascent Lightning is as a technology, Mallers noted optimism about the potential of the second layer protocol while also pointing out that this third epoch will still be focused on figuring out what exactly mass Bitcoin adoption looks like. Bitcoin as a technology offers us many efficiencies, especially in consumer commerce, which is generally a super inefficient system, he said. But I'm excited for the journey, quite frankly, and being one of those that's on the ground fighting the fight. I think the answers will be clear in 4 years, and between now and then, it's just time to figure them out. Of course, The answers will also be largely dictated by the use cases that emerge in the near future. The panel spent some time discussing the newer Lightning ideas that get them the most excited in this epoch. I think one of the most exciting things is the LSATs, Lightning Service Authentication Tokens, Dannon explained. It's going to be really interesting to replicate some of the token-based authentication schemes that we already have with centralized providers, but do it with self-sovereign identity, which is pseudonymous and which is persistent across the network. To hear more about how Lightning Network is poised to grow following Bitcoin's third halving, visit our YouTube page for the rest of our BitcoinHalving.com livestream panels. All right, so that was just a quick little beat on Lightning and the videos that they have posted on the YouTube, and the two that are actually embedded in this article are really good. But I just kind of wanted—I thought this was a decent little lead into just a general discussion about what's going on with Lightning right now. The LSATs really is interesting. The more I learn about it, the more it actually seems a much more powerful tool than I had originally thought. And I kind of want to expand on that a little bit as well. But real quick, let's take a break and talk about our sponsor. Bitcoin Audible is made possible by Swan Bitcoin. You know, Corey, their CEO, actually said something the other day in a conversation that I thought was really pertinent, is just that it's antithetical to Bitcoin to think that, you know, just because they are devoted to Bitcoin, that somebody should give them their service. That what it does, it is allows them to provide a better product. And that's what Swan Bitcoin is. They're not only the simplest means of doing auto buys for Bitcoin in an ongoing savings plan, they are also the lowest cost by pretty significant margins. And they want their users to hold their own keys. They do not even charge withdrawal fees. Whatever it costs to put it on chain, Swan Bitcoin pays that. You auto-stack Bitcoin in an ongoing savings plan, and it auto-withdraws to your keys, and you get exactly what you purchased. Actually, right when I sat down to record this episode, so serendipitously I got my notification that I had stacked another bit of Bitcoin, and also had gotten a referral from someone else signing up. So thank you guys so much for that. Don't forget to do that when you set up your Bitcoin savings plan. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will also get me bragging points and a couple extra sats. A great way to get your savings plan right and support the show at the same time. Okay, let's talk about Lightning. So there have been a ton of little things that have just dropped over the past. In fact, I was actually just talking about this with Adam Meister the other day. I was trying to bring up everything, but we didn't quite have the time to really dig into it. I'm sure I won't really be able to go in depth here. I think I probably want to do like kind of a breakdown of certain developments, potentially have people on the show to kind of go over these with. But there are so many interesting things. One of the things that I think is most interesting, or probably the most effective or influential into the progress of the network, is the raising of the channel limits. Now, obviously, you've always been able to, you know, put as much into a channel as you want, but the inability to do that on, like, that the default and client side is to restrict it to, what was it, 0.042 Bitcoin or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But it's just a handful of $100, you know, like $400 or $500, something like that. And it was basically a testament to, you know, this is still reckless. There is cost to doing this. There are no great assurances. We still have issues with backups, hard drive, and, you know, hardware failures still cause problems. Maybe, you know, there's always some kinks to work out in the network, et cetera, et cetera. Basically a declaration that, you know, calm down. This is still nascent. And this is still a young network. Well, that has been raised. And actually, now that I'm talking about it on the show, I realize I don't actually know what the new limit is. I want to say it's just like, you know, 4 or 5 times as high as it was previously. It's still, you know, obviously there's still like a default limit here. But I think this is a big hindrance to actually, like this is an infrastructure network. Again, I've said this a number of times on the show that the way to think about this is to look at it as infrastructure that's being built out. It's digital infrastructure, or it's a virtual infrastructure on the Lightning, or excuse me, on the Bitcoin base layer. It's a set of alterable contracts, I guess you could say, that allow communication on a second layer network. So the bulk of what we'll see in the actual Lightning sphere will not be users. And we're already seeing this heavily, like Zap, Breeze, so many of these Lightning service providers and the companies that do this open private channels with customers. And this makes sense because what we would see on the actual Lightning network, most of it is going to go dark. And what you can actually scan, what you can actually talk to on the gossip network is not going to be users. It's not adoption. It's infrastructure. It's the number of channels available between businesses, between services, between people hosting nodes, between people running their own websites and their own stores, this sort of thing. That is what the actual Lightning network is going to be, in my opinion. And I think we're seeing, I think we can extrapolate that from the trend we're already seeing. You can kind of look at it and observe and like talk to people, and this is what's happening right now. We don't want users routing payments because users are, they're just there when they need it. They don't have 100% uptime. That's what makes them a user rather than a server, rather than a part of the infrastructure. And because of that, I think, you know, any risk in having large amounts of money in a channel, like Bitfinex has already taken the risk, you know, like they're an exchange that has allowed people to deposit and withdraw over Lightning. Obviously, only small amounts, but nonetheless, they have made it available. But I think exchanges adopting this has been, or not adopting this, has been largely due to a sense of a risk in the security and the lack of liquidity, that you channels stay small, that they can't do this with $1 million yet for some user. And when we break that barrier, when we iterate on all the backups, on all the fail safes during hard drive problems, on the recovery mechanisms, all these things that lower the risk and lower the attack vectors on Lightning, as we figure those things out and we have huge channels between exchanges so that somebody can move $10 million from one to the other instantly and then make a trade, do arbitrage across exchanges like that, that is going to be a game changer. And most importantly is that once you have that level of back-end infrastructure, of that sort of liquidity, at the end user no longer, like the limits in trying to find a route for a $5 payment become almost non-existent. Whereas, you know, some exchanges will inevitably, like, or potentially users will have, you know, private $10 million or $50 million channels with exchange A, B, and C or something like that and don't want to be used for routing payments. There will also be a huge amount of public infrastructure that will actually try to refill their liquidity or their channels to go to and from, like for, you know, a $10 million payment to an exchange. Maybe they want to correct it by offering zero fee to go the opposite direction so that they can get that $10 million back out and have another person able to send them $10 million via those channels, via that infrastructure. And in the end, the user gets unbelievably low payments because they are the ones pushing liquidity one direction or another through this network with small payments in order to feed these huge settlements that can actually happen over Lightning the more secure and more reliable it becomes. Not to mention all the extra functionality and a lot of other things that can come with this, you know, LSAT in particular, because I'm increasingly more excited about what that can actually mean. And I know I've mentioned this a number of times on the show, but I have loved playing with Sphinx. This is an app that I have been wanting to have for quite some time, and there's still some kinks to work out. And I think there's probably the biggest hurdle right now is just inviting. Well, I mean, this is part of the beta just because he has to assign a node right now, but inviting and kind of finding users is a little, I'm curious how that's going to be worked out in the long run. For how do I add, you know, Brady or Brecky, like how do I add some of my Bitcoin friends specifically, and how do I find them? Because right now it's manual by just adding like a public key, which, you know, makes sense, but from a noob user, it's a little odd, right? Like, even though it's simple as a mechanism, you know, functionally, it's not a whole lot different than like add me by my username, but from a human readable perspective, it looks crazy. It's not immediately intuitive unless you kind of know the whole public private key thing, and you know that your public key is your identity. So I'm very curious how there could be a workaround, or maybe, you know, just the service or something offers like the ability to snag a username that you can connect to them through. And without being in person and being able to just scan a QR code, the public key is just a little bit clunky. I'm curious how to really clean that interaction up for the standard user. But outside of that, Sphinx has been amazing. And I haven't even gotten to play around with WhatsApp. And I keep forgetting the name of the other one. There's like three or four now. A friend in the crew was actually just showing one to me the other day, and I need to play around with those other ones, but like Sphinx has just been, even though there's not a whole lot of people on it, it's behaved exactly how I would expect any sort of a messenger app to behave, except for the fact that obviously I can send sats back and forth, and I'm a node on the network, and we're using the gossip protocol to actually communicate. So like we're routing this communication and over the Lightning Network, and our Lightning node, our public key that is our presence on Lightning, is our identity, which is just awesome. And to be able to combine something like that, imagine the same app that you use to send payments back and forth, to chat with friends, and to have a real end-to-end encrypted, decentralized chatting infrastructure. That's also how you log into stuff. You scan QR codes to log into things, and boom, you mix their URL with your public key, and then they know it's you, that you're back into the same account. And it's the same thing for every website. You don't have a username and password for every damn thing that you go to. You have a non-centralized, like a user side key that is your identity across the network. Like, this is that kind of fundamental infrastructure and that base layer authentication and value protocol that the internet never had. And the potential to actually solve that on top of something that already has these feedback loops, because so much of that is a bootstrapping problem, right? Like, you know, you could build something like Blockstack or free, like, you know, a whole separate internet with, what's the one that... IPFS that, you know, like you can try to completely replace the entire thing, but you need that momentum. You know, there needs to be some sort of a feedback loop and a network that, like, you can't just replace the old. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about getting one that integrates, that talks on the internet and can actually just shift information and shift communication over to this, that communication and information that is most valued, most critical and important to that new infrastructure that Bitcoin brings you in by investment, but then immediately you start to figure out all the other ways you can apply it to new things. You can use that, you know, as soon as you have a hardware wallet, suddenly you have the, like, for your money, you have some of the highest key security that you can get anywhere. You've made it normal for the new, like, noob user, like the average person who gets in and actually learns anything about Bitcoin, to massively improve their layer of security and backups. And same with like multi-sig and things. As I've said numerous times, you know, Bitcoin is the largest deployment of public-private key cryptography that has ever existed. There is some, after you get people on board just to invest, you realize what laying that groundwork and adoption could actually mean if you utilized that public-private key system for an entirely new purpose, for authentication, for identity. And I don't mean like some other database for identity. I mean it in the sense that you use the keys you already secured, which you don't even have to tie. You can easily do separate from any like Bitcoin itself. Like you're not giving up your addresses or any transaction data in order to like facilitate communication. You can always hash a new public key from it. One that's not at all tied to any Bitcoin or transactions or anything on the blockchain, but is simply your identity. And store it on, it's still on your hardware wallet, and you've got a level of security for how you authenticate yourself to the world that is incomparable, and you could never have hoped to get people to care or take that level of consideration without them having been onboarded to Bitcoin already. You know, there was no strong enough incentive for people to care for it. And this is like something that's laying down a foundational, like a security infrastructure that is profound and can be utilized for all of these other things. And seeing Lightning begin to take advantage of that like now I have, like I would love to see something like that integrated into Breeze, that my Breeze wallet was just how I, you know, scan the QR code just like anything else and log into a website. Still pseudonymous. Nobody knows who I am. I'm a public key among a whole crap ton of public keys. I can link my Sphinx to the Breeze wallet. So that's also my node. Like the ability to extend this out into other applications and to other uses multiplies on itself so quickly once you start getting these main Lego pieces in place, and you realize you can build whole buildings and new networks and everything on top of this. You know, Jack actually said in the second video that was posted, again, I'll have these links in the show notes, and somebody else said it too. I couldn't remember if it was Reeves from Fold or not. The incredible interoperability of these tools. Like so Jack does Strike, which if nobody knows, you put dollars into Strike and you use it like Cash App, except that you don't have, because it's running on the Bitcoin rails in the back end, you don't have the closed, that walled garden of something like Cash App or Venmo or anything like that. Like if you have Venmo, I can't scan my Cash App and you send it to me. Like there's no way to do that. That friction is impossible. Like then it would have to go from Venmo back to a bank account, and then it would have to go through the banking system, then it would have to offload at the other end at Cash App. Like the nightmare of an orchestration that causes, that's why these things are closed networks. They can't talk to each other. They're not an internet of money. They are closed apps. If you want to send Venmo, you send it to another person with Venmo. That's it. That's the only option. Cash App, you send it to other Cash App users. Otherwise, you have to withdraw, pay a fee, wait a couple of days, you get it in your bank account, you deploy it, deposit it into the other app, and then you send it. And God forbid your country doesn't allow that, or your bank takes too long, or some sort of flag gets hit. I mean, the number of problems and headaches in that process is extraordinary. But something like something like Strike, like what that does is it, by using Bitcoin and Lightning as the payment rails, as the infrastructure in the background, you end up holding Bitcoin. I've got $4.96 left, I think, right now, and it's because I spent 3 cents on Sparkshot.io drawing some random garbage by selecting pixels. Strike, I have dollars in Strike, but they use Bitcoin as a payment rail so that everything is interoperable. Imagine if you could send from Venmo to Cash App, from Cash App to Strike, from Strike to Breeze, from Breeze to your, you know, your Fold, whatever it is. Like if everything actually spoke the same monetary language and you didn't have to hold Bitcoin. Like that's one of the things that they talked about. Like the success of Bitcoin may very well be that most people don't know they're using it. That they see
They see the logo of Bitcoin and they recognize it just like they see MasterCard or Visa every once in a while, but they don't know or care what's happening on the back end. They care that their money maintains its value and they care that it gets where it's going to go. Bitcoin and Lightning together are an incredible tool for accomplishing that. And to be able to do that on the back end, to be able to get rid of all the jurisdictions and the borders, and that you just scan a QR code, it doesn't matter where it is in the world, doesn't matter what country it's in, doesn't matter who's receiving it, doesn't matter whether it's day or night or banking hours or whatever, you move immediately from that one to the other. And in the case of Strike, it decides what the best route is. If it's Lightning, it sends a Lightning payment. If it's too much or there's no route or something like that, it sends a Bitcoin payment. It does atomic swap if it needs to fulfill a Bitcoin QR, if it scans a Lightning QR. It doesn't matter. And or if you want to send it to another Strike user, it just does it within their own, you know, allocation, their own like back-end database. And the user sees nothing but a QR code. It doesn't care. You don't know or have any idea which one it chose to do or for what reason. The service handles that. And that, I think, is how most people will interact with it. And in doing so, we've left the option open for anyone who wants to be sovereign, who wants to be censorship resistant, who wants to secure the base layer of the monetary system, completely open to doing so. We never lose the ability to actually scale in a censorship resistant, sovereign way, even though businesses are going to fill the gap and they're going to use this as reliable, global monetary infrastructure that allows everything to interoperate in the world of finance, in the world of money, exactly the same way that the internet did for communication. You don't just send Gmail, your email to other Gmail users. You can send it to anybody with email. You don't just connect to websites on your service provider. You connect to any website in the world. It's an independent protocol for monetary exchange and monetary security. And it continues to get better and better. Something else that they mentioned that I didn't get to talk about, I don't think I got to talk about this in Adam Meister's show either. I have to do an episode really just kind of breaking down the technicals of these sometime, hopefully pretty soon. But there's another one called KeySend, which essentially, like right now, everything is an invoice, right? For anybody who uses Lightning, like I have to create an invoice so that, you know, somebody who's sending me money can scan it and then pay it, which kind of interrupts and is annoying with, you know, the way Bitcoin has always worked is, you know, I post an address or a QR and then you could just send money to it. And that's not really been possible before, but now KeySend allows that exact thing. It's just a matter of time, now you can pay to a public key that I can just post up a QR code, and you can send me a Lightning payment. I don't have to change it. I don't have to produce invoices. I don't have to constantly request. It doesn't expire. It just sends it to me, and that is awesome. So many other neat things to come. Multipath payments have hit, and now we've got like a channel liquidity service that allows that. Too much to go into. I don't want to bog down this episode with a whole bunch of stuff. This was just a really fun, little blip to kind of start a conversation up about Lightning again. And an opportunity to, kind of share a couple of the new things, that have happened and, kind of what I thought the best of these two conversations, the videos from BitcoinHalving.com, were, in my opinion. Because it got me really excited. So if you guys haven't watched those, you can just go to BitcoinHalving.com. But again, in the show notes, I'll just be posting the links themselves straight to the video, so you can get them there as well. I'll remember to post them underneath the Twitter thread also. With that, yeah, don't forget to, you know, stack those Bitcoin. Get your automatic Bitcoin savings plan set up, set it and forget it, and it's done. It just works at swanbitcoin.com/guy. And of course, share this out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. We are Bitcoin Audible, making all of the best in Bitcoin accessible to everyone. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.